Okay, so call the meeting to order. Has everybody had an opportunity to look at the minutes from the last meeting?
Yes.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Gary, second by Rebecca. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, any public comment for items that are not on the agenda? Okay. Any disclosures and recusals? So let's move into new business. First, E1, the Linden Live Cousin Garage, and I believe Patrick, you want to come up?
Good evening. I'm Patrick Cass. I'm Director of Transportation for the University of Wisconsin, and what I'd like to present tonight is some information on our new Linden Drive parking garage. So fairly short presentation, but this particular slide is just kind of a campus overview. The garage is going to be located on the east side of an existing parking lot, Lot 62, which is between the School of Vet Med and the UW Natatorium, so right along Observatory Drive. We're also next to the Meat Science facility to the east. So the hold on to figure out the advancement on this. There we go. The garage itself was part of the comprehensive campus master plan that was just recently approved. The idea for this facility is with the expansion of the vet school, we are going to be losing a little over 200 parking spaces on the surface parking lot. With the meat lab, we lost about 40. So what we're trying to do is replace the parking that we're going to lose to new building construction, plus add a little more capacity for visitor parking on the site, given that the needs of the future vet med and then the natatorium as it goes forward. So and what you're seeing here, just some renderings that were part of the campus master plan documentation. Just getting a little bit closer, what we're looking at doing is creating a new access road as part of this project coming off Observatory, with entry exit points on the west side of the garage and then also on the south side off of Linden Drive. This project will not be shutting down Linden over to Easter Day, but that is part of the Vet Med project when that comes to be, so which is the reason we're building this new access facility. As part of planning and design for this structure, we did a TIA, and working with the city, we picked intersections where we wanted to study and look at the impact. And really the highlights from the draft TIA is that this garage is not expected to have any significant impact on traffic. We're only netting about 150 new spaces, but with them being visitors, their dynamic is they don't come and go during rush hour or during peak times. Only about 30% of them will. And then really the report goes through and says they're not expecting to need any countermeasures to support the additional traffic from this facility. And just a little bit more detail as to what we're designing the entry or the garage layout. This is just the first floor, but we're looking at a double entry point here on the northwest, double exit a little bit farther south, and then an entry exit point completely on the south, one in, one out. Fully automated facility as far as it's going to be mostly permit holders. Of the 600 spaces, we're looking at about 400 permit holders and about 200 visitors total. And then just, I'm not going to be able to speak to this much, but this is kind of the timeline of review, as this is kind of the first project to go through from the approved master plan. We're kind of taking it through the process, and here we are tonight. And our next step from here is the design review board in early November. So with that, I'm open to questions.
Rebecca, go ahead.
Rebecca. And it's about Linden Drive. So this is that tiny discontinuous piece of Linden Drive behind the meat place. Was there an idea to extend Linden Drive to the east to connect it up with Elm? Is that Elm?
Linden Drive currently goes. Well, this is. Linden Drive actually already goes through and connects in over at, I believe it's Babcock.
Yeah.
At Babcock.
At Babcock. It does not cross the creek to the west. So there is a portion between Walnut and...
I'm looking at your drawing here, and it looks like it does. It looks like it.
That's just part of a... Which map are you... Is that the initial...
This one? Oh, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, so it comes down through here, and it connects in right at this point right here. This is where...
But it is discontinuous with the rest of Linden Drive.
It is because of the creek.
Right, okay.
Here it comes in, and it drops down, and then this becomes Linden Drive at this point. So it does connect...
So people will be able to access it not only from Observatory, access the parking garage, but coming from... Babcock, I guess.
Yes.
That is.
Yeah, they'll be able to take Linden Drive from Charter Street all the way west to the garage.
Yeah, that's how I go to
vet school.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken my dog to the vet school.
Okay. Yeah, the only piece of Linden Drive right now is it does not cross the creek.
Other questions for Patrick?
Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have a resolution in front of us
to approve the Linden Park. There's a motion by Ken. Seconded by Bill to approve the resolution as amended, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Approve the substitute resolution. Discussion? Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Okay. Motion approved. Okay. Next, Chuck, who is going to talk about the notice? Okay.
My proposals all have a unanimous consensus.
Yeah. I gotcha.
I mean, I should run.
You should.
Hi, Mick. Hi, Drew.
Everybody else is.
I'm Drew Beck, Planning and Scheduling Manager at Metro. And I'm Mick Roos, the Marketing Manager at Metro.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Want to talk about the notice of public hearing?
Sure. Yeah, we're proposing to do some modifications to routes 37 and 38, and we're off of our regular timeline with these changes a bit because we normally have them all occur in August, right before the UW goes back into session. But in this case, we want to have them ready for the March implementation in advance of the Buckeye Road reconstruction project that is likely to take place next year. And so what we wanted to do is have, when we go off of Buckeye Road for the construction and go on detour, we'd like the final routing that'll be out there once the reconstruction's done, have it be the same as a detour to, you know, minimize confusion, and we actually think it's going to be better routing on top of it.
Okay. Any other questions for Mick and Drew?
Refresh my memory. How busy are these two routes?
Well, the 38 especially, it's a busy commuter route from the kind of the, I guess you'd call it the near southeast side. It's inside of Stoughton Road, between Flom Road, Cottage Grove Road, and then it heads in on Atwood Avenue towards the square and UW. But there, yeah, the 38 is a pretty busy commuter route. 37, less so.
Okay.
Other questions for Drew or Mick? Okay.
So moved.
Move.
Okay, motion and
second.
And a second to approve the public hearing for the next meeting in November. Any discussion? Just make sure I don't want to miss anybody going around the circle here. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Okay, thanks. Right, next we have some informational presentations and discussion items. We have some on the Lewington Street and Judge Doyle parking garages, but could we do the bicycle center first? Because I understand somebody had some time issues there, David.
We've resolved that.
Okay. All right. So, Sabrina, are you? All right.
All right, so I'll start with some updates here on Judge Doyle and then just have some brief updates on the Livingston garage. With Judge Doyle, the podium project actually is at Urban Design Commission this evening, looking for final approval on that. I wanted to kind of give a review of what that podium piece is for anyone who might not be as familiar with it. But the public underground garage is under construction now. That's about 560 parking spaces. Earlier this year, the city approved additional funding for the city to build what's called the podium, which is the two levels of above-grade parking. And then this retail space here, and this loading to create basically a finished site that's developable for future development. Part of the reason to get those two above-grade parking levels was so that when the underground public parking garage opens, we'll be able to occupy that without interruption and construction can continue above. So this is essentially, if we're looking at just the podium piece here, the apartment towers that will go above grade in the future development as part of the private development are not shown here. So this is just a rendering. A couple options that are being looked at right now that Urban Design Commission had asked were regarding some of the doorway widths to make it a little bit more visible, clear that these were the entryways. So these are a couple different options. You can see this is the Wilson Street entrance with the original here, a little bit wider design, and then wider with some signage here. So those are the options they're considering this evening. Looking at the Doty Street side, just for some context, this is the bike center here. The public parking and the podium parking entrance are at this level. So the podium or the above grade parking will have its exit here, entrance over here on the right, and then this middle lane here is a speed ramp reversible lane. So that'll be an in-out depending on rush hour traffic. off of that Doty Street side. And this also just shows kind of those different options with the doorway widths over here as well. In terms of timing for that project, we're looking at opening the underground public parking garage in August of next year. Demolition then would begin on the Government East, with that expected to be completed by the end of next year. So the podium component is expected to begin in March. With that above ground, we should hit grade by the end of this year. With those two levels of podium parking, then once those are constructed, we can move forward with opening the below grade portion for public parking. Eventually, that above grade public parking would be used likely for our fleet and monthly permit parkers until there was a private tenant with an associated above grade development. Another item, too, that you may be aware of, it was introduced at Council, some amendments to the development agreement that will go to Council on Tuesday. And I didn't include it with the packet here, but the file is available online, and we'll have Patrick send a copy of that. It's not a referral to this commission, but there is an item in there related to, at some point in the future, having mutually agreeable terms to the TC and city with the developer regarding use of parking in that podium, which is intended to serve and has been intended to serve that future development. And essentially, it just says that those terms, when negotiated, would be, you know, coming forward and require your approval. So we'll send out that link, and you can read the text to that as well.
Okay. You had said fleet's going to be there, but it would just be temporary. As soon as there were occupants above, fleet goes somewhere else.
Right, and depending on that, the timing of when that future development could occur, it could be a couple of years down the road. So we'd try to make best use of that space, and that above grade parking really isn't well suited for hourly public parking. Again, with those three entrances, it would be confusing for public parkers, one, to remember where they're at if they're an infrequent user. So really we want to keep that for regular users, permit parkers, tenants that are having either a monthly permit or some sort of lease agreement. And then, you know, ultimately that would free up additional space in that below ground, the public, for additional hourly parking. And then just a quick update on Livingston. This is a photo from the live cam as of this afternoon, about 1 p.m. We are getting very close to completion. There's still obviously some finishing work, the art piece component, the mesh facade on the garage, and the glass elevator corridor and the Livingston stairwell are still under construction. But getting very near to completion, we'll be installing our parking access control equipment beginning Monday. So we'll have our vendor down with the team to start that installation. Myron is finishing up the wiring and networking cabling this week, so that will be ready to go on Monday. And the targeted completion date is the end of next week, or the end of the month. It could be, you know, a week longer, closer to November 9th, but as of right now, the targeted date is the end of next week.
Other questions for Sabrina?
I do.
Gary?
Is this supposed to be fully automated, do you have people on site? I've forgotten which way we went on that.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So this one is fully automated, assuming that the vast majority of use, at least during the weekday, will be permit parkers. We expect when there are special events that we'll have staff there to, similar to what we do at Brayton Lot, where we'll have pay and entry special events. But staff will be there to show people, you know, how to use the equipment, let them know that it's a flat rate payment that they can make anytime, and encourage them to do so before they leave and avoid lines. So we'll have staff on hand doing that. And we'll also have an office It'll have a cashiering station in an office, really just sort of as a backup if customer assistance is needed during peak use periods from, you know, those hourly parkers or special event parkers. And we'll have we will have security patrolling like we do during after hours at our other facilities, and a maintenance worker who will be assigned primarily to this facility. So we typically have one maintenance worker assigned to a specific facility with some rotation schedules on the weekends to cover several of them.
Okay. Sort of related to this, and I don't need an answer right now, but what I'd be interested in, since this is the first new facility that we're putting up in decades, right, could you maybe give us a presentation at a future meeting of what are the significant construction changes that contribute to longevity? Because I remember your predecessor, Bill, would talk about how these had certain life cycles, and after a while, with ceilings falling down and things like that, it just starts. So maybe, you know, is it a different kind of materials? Is it a different kind of design? What has changed in the last 40 years to just sort of, because this is our first new one, right? Mm-hmm. In mm-hmm. Since when? Since
the early 80s.
Yeah, yeah. So mm-hmm. 40 years sure. Almost. Anyway, don't do that now.
Okay.
But maybe a little a show and tell the next time.
Sure.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, very good. Jessica.
Operation. I'm going back to the Dutch
oil.
The fleet operations are being moved. I'm just curious whether that's replacing any of the fleet operations that are currently on Henry and kind of, is it Henry and Doty that there's a fleet operations building? Or would it just be kind of additional overflow?
So we currently have 40 spaces designated for city fleet. When prior to the remodel of MMB and in this project, we had the city lot with the stacked parking. And so this is where a number of city vehicles were located, and that was their permanent home for shared pool vehicles. Okay. So additional parking, you know, was also noted as a need for city fleet vehicles. And this would essentially replace what used to be that the MMB parking lot.
Okay.
And so those 40 spaces, you know, essentially would be moved to that upper level, as well as our monthly permit parkers, until such time that there was a private use for that above-grade parking, and then they'd go to that below grade as intended originally.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Other comments or questions for Sabrina? Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
And we'll add that to the agenda for next time,
sure.
if that's an adequate time. Okay. Okay, are we ready with the Judge Doyle Bicycle Center?
So I'll just skip right to the...
Can we get you to introduce yourself?
My name is Abby Davidson. I'm on the Free Will Board of Directors, and this is Elijah McCloskey, the Executive Director.
Okay.
My name is Abby Davidson for Free Will.
My name is Elijah McCloskey. I'm the Executive Director with Free Will.
So what you see up on screen is the plans for the Bicycle Center. We've actually been meeting about monthly with LVDA to nail down things like the quantities and layout and specifications for basically everything in the Bicycle Center, whether that's provided by the city or by Free Will.
Mm-hmm.
In the center of the space is a retail shop, and then around the sides you'll find these are bicycle parking for members of the Bicycle Center. On the wall here and on the wall on the other side here, there's double stack bicycle parking. In the back of the space, there's showers and toilets, and a bike wash. And there will also be some retail display area towards the front of the space. The entrance is right over here. And so basically members, people could get a membership, and they would have 24/7 access to the space to use the bicycle parking and the showers. And during business hours, the retail space would open. So there's the dashed lines right here indicate there's security doors that could open during business hours, and then during off hours, they would be closed.
And we've been working really hard with LVDA to make sure that the bicycle parking is optimized, but also that the event space and education space is optimized, and that we have as much retail space, secure retail space as possible. Having more linear feet of retail space is going to make the whole project more sustainable in the long term for any operator.
Yeah. And the retail space here, it includes both retail mechanics and so the bike stands can hold bicycle mechanic classes during the evenings and weekends. And there's, I guess, meeting space for other classes and events. There'll be a projector so we could project, video and watch, host events, that would, like, Tour de France or something like that.
Or any local cycling-related startup could do a presentation on their products there, or if the Bike Fed wanted to do some sort of a party or a fundraiser, it would be an ideal venue for that sort of thing.
And there's also, I forgot to mention, there's a bike stand that is available in the 24/7 area for members. Most of the bike stands are inside the retail area, but there is one available, and it has tools attached to it, which is a nice feature. I wanted to show, there we have, they also provided a reflected ceiling plan. This just shows the lighting. There's some ceiling-mounted bike storage that would mostly be display bikes. And there's security cameras throughout the space. They're still working with a security consultant to determine exactly where they should be located and what quantities. I think they put 9 security cameras, which is a little bit too much, so we'll probably try to economize that a little bit. Here's some elevations of the space. So you can see the double-tier bike parking, the single vertical parking, and then the ceiling-mounted bike parking. The ceilings are 14 feet high at the max.
And the ceiling-mounted bike parking is going to be for either customer service jobs or for sale bicycles. It's not going to be for the general public.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I was wondering about the logistics. Exactly.
You need a ladder to get up on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then this is what it'll look like inside the repair shop. There's cabinets and shelving for people to work on bikes and store bike parts, mostly consumable bike parts that people would want to replace on their bike, like cables and tubes and stuff like that.
Again, that's where we're going to have several classes a week, many of them available free of charge to people in need, in addition to traditional bicycle retail services and repairs.
And then here are some isometric drawings. So you can see this would be the entrance to the space off of Pinckney Street, and then you could come in and there's kind of the middle retail box, or the middle retail and shop box, and then around the area is the 24/7 member area. There's glass walls along Doty Street and Pinckney Street, so you can see into the space. And these are the other sides of it. There's also, as you can see, lockers. There's a bank of lockers. 118 lockers is what it came out to. And there's also 118 bikes, most of which are member bikes. And there's, I think, 30 of them are the ceiling-mounted bikes. And then this might be an even better picture. There. Mm-hmm.
So the green will be the clear walkway, and you can see where the security doors will be. On the right-hand side will be additional retail space, and then also the glass wall and door facing the street.
And then this is from the back. This is, I believe, from the shower, around the shower area walk or hallway. And this is the other side of that shower area hallway, seeing both banks of lockers. I think some of them will be two-tier, and I think they changed some of them to be four-tier to get that 118 number. There. Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. Did I hear you say that at some point during the night you will close the facility? It'll be closed at night, or did I?
Yes, it'll be during business hours. It'll be open, but for 24/7 access for members who have key cards, they can access it. So if somebody wants to get to work at 5 a.m. and the bike shop is closed, they can still drop off their bike and take a shower, even though the bike center will be closed.
Okay. And then when it's only open to people with the key card, will you have some sort of security? I mean, you mentioned cameras, but actual physical human beings walking or
I mean, I assume there may be police officers walking by.
Oh, it'd be relying on the city.
Yeah, yeah. But there would be security cameras, and I guess people would just have to trust members to not let other people in.
Okay.
And we're working with the security company to have some sort of emergency notification system to a manager, similar to how you would for any sort of like Kohl's or Target, like box store, where the manager in charge would get a phone call if there was an issue, and then the security company would as well.
Okay. The second question has to do with membership, and I guess I understand if you have a membership card, there's certain privileges. Obviously, you can get in after hours. You have a locker, take a shower, give your bike a bath. And the amount that you're charging for that membership, does any of that accrue to the city in any way, or is it all for free will?
All of that is to offset some of the costs. According to the original plan that we had looked at, all of the funding from that, and that's probably not going to be a significant amount of money. Most of our operating budget is going to be coming from sales and service.
Okay.
That we're actually, because of what we're competing with, we can't charge more than, I don't know, $30 a month.
Okay.
Times 118 members doesn't come out to a lot.
Yeah, gotcha.
Rebecca.
So two questions. So during when the shop is open, can members of the public who aren't members of the center bring their bike in and wash it and take showers?
Wash it, yes. I'm not sure about the showers. That would have to be a policy thing. Bathroom use, absolutely. I don't know about the showers. It kind of would depend on what people think, what should be. And there maybe is like a potentially liability issue there if they're not like signing paperwork.
David?
The intent is that the showers are for the members themselves, and there will be key card entry into the restrooms and the showers kind of built into that. So you have to pay to use the showers. I don't know about the bike wash, how you would handle that. But
I would say the general public can use it. I mean, there's...
Wash your bike, then take it out of there and park it somewhere
else. Sure. Yeah. I mean, especially if you're coming in to do, like, one of our classes and you're not a member, then maybe that's something you would want to utilize.
And also, is there storage for trailers, bike trailers?
We do not have bike trailer specific storage. However, bike trailers can be stored in similar areas that bicycles can be stored.
Yeah, I would think the vertical storage would probably be the best. So if you had your bike here, you could probably, there would still be room you could put it next to or behind the vertical bike without blocking the green path.
Or get a second hanger just for the trailer. Obviously, it's going to depend on the trailer. Like a single wheel trailer, like a Bob Yak, is definitely going to fit on pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. But some of the wider, like multi-child Burleys, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to fit in.
So it's not like, so if you're, it's not like one spot per member and you have your spot. You can just, if you're a member, you can come in with your bike and your trailer and take up whatever space you need.
I think our understanding was that it was going to be one spot, one hook per member. And that if you wanted an additional space for multiple bikes for a family, there would be a discounted package available based off of availability. And then again, I don't think we touched on this yet. There will be discounted options or free options available for people in need. And there will be a limited number of spots available either at a discounted rate or at an entirely subsidized rate for those in need.
And there is also, I guess it's worth mentioning that in the space, which is not shown here, but if you're going to walk outside into, it's like covered but not enclosed area, mm-hmm. there is a pretty significant amount of bike parking there. So if somebody, you know, if we're wildly popular and it's a day when everyone's biking and we managed to be overbooked, there is a, you know, people could still lock their bike out here, so they wouldn't be completely out of luck.
And that's indoors and under security camera. It's just not a locked area.
Yeah.
People can just walk in. It'll be like any of this parking in any other parking ramp. Mm-hmm. And there's no charge for that.
Other questions or comments?
Parking racks work? The bike parking racks?
It's a hydraulic lift, so like the tray sort of comes down like this,
okay.
So that it's down towards the ground,
mm-hmm.
and then you can wheel the bicycle up on there, and then it will lift up. So
okay.
You don't need to be able to lift a bike above your head,
okay.
In order to do that. And that was a big success, I think, in finding a good product that could do that.
Interesting, Ken.
Just offhand, what other places currently operate the thing like this? I mean, this is brand new to Madison, but obviously
one in Chicago.
You're not the first one. Chicago,
and there's one
this.
In Santa, oh, the beach, Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara.
Okay. And we visited both. We've sent people to visit both of them and take notes. In terms of the bike storage membership, in terms of the like bicycle nonprofit community center. There's usually about at least one in every major city, and I actually just got done with a fact-finding mission. I visited 30 bicycle nonprofits in seven states in 14 days and took detailed notes about, that was fun. Strung together a bunch of one-ways. No, I didn't go by bike. I strung together a bunch of one-way flights. I went to Denver, Miami, New York, New Jersey, Boston,
okay.
Louisville, and took a bunch of notes, and we're looking at their successes. So those can be like classes, programs for bikes for homeless people, bikes for
cool.
all sorts of bicycle nonprofit type things. Like we were looking at the whole spectrum, and we're going to be using that to fine tune our 5-year plan and look at their successes and look at their failures and the context they exist within, and sort of structure what we're doing around that in order to kind of learn from the best practices. And we visited some that are huge. They've been around since the 80s, and they give away literally 10,000 bikes a year or teach thousands of students, close to 10,000 students a year, education. And then we visited really small ones, just a guy in his garage helping out the neighborhood. And so we're going to be learning from that. But, yeah, the best comparables are in Chicago and Santa Barbara, and we visited both of those.
Thanks.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Gary.
Is there any connection with B-Cycle? I mean, have you any kind of arrangement with the for-profit bike rental entity in the city?
We do not have a specific contract, but our understanding was that there would be a B-Cycle rack outside independent
okay.
of the building,
okay.
independently operated by them, no relation to us. But simply because the project is so large, it makes sense to put one there,
okay.
especially since it's so central.
Good.
But we do not have a specific contractual arrangement with them.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody have any other comments or questions? David, did you have anything you wanted to add? Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next I have F2, update on Wilson and Bassett Street transportation study. I'm not sure who's doing that. Okay. All right. David, Gretchen, thanks.
Yes, hello, I'm David Trowbridge. This is Gretchen Aviles-Pinero. We are working on Wilson Street, working together on this project. Thought it'd be a good idea to come speak to this group at this time because we are fairly quickly scheduling public information meetings to affected people in the area, and primarily due to the fact there was a budget amendment to add some funds to rebuild one small section of Wilson Street due to utility issues that they're having, flooding and things like that, and the condition of the pavement as well is not great. So what we wanted to share with you was essentially some information that we're gathering that we're planning to present to the public in early November. So let me just talk a little bit about the general location, then some of the existing conditions information that we're developing, and then what I'd really like to hear from you are if we're on the right track in terms of the goals and objectives that we have set for Wilson Street. And even though we're talking about a very specific project, you see down here is the one that I was referring to, recently constructed this two-block section. Last year, there's also a project here at Blair Street to kind of clean up the conflicts and to fix the condition of that intersection. It's really quite awful. The idea is that even though we have a very specific construction project, we wanted to take a look at a broader corridor and talk about the functionality of Wilson Street and even this little section here of Broome. Oh, that wasn't working before. Okay. Because of the importance of this regional bike path and John Nolan Drive and that connection up from Broome, accessing what I would say is probably the densest part of the city and the most highest job concentration. So really looking at the corridor in a larger context was something that we felt was a good idea and wanted to reach out to the public fairly soon. So existing conditions, you can see we're picking up traffic volumes, and it varies quite a bit. The easterly portion is almost double what it is in part of the other, many of the other sections because of a lot of traffic diverting up King Street. We're also looking at turning movements, obviously very important to how we design the intersection and how we flow traffic through the area, bicycles, pedestrians, key intersection here at Broome and Wilson Street. And again, I've got the slides at your place. Hopefully you grabbed one if you want to look at it and ask a question, but I'm just going to kind of whip through this to give you a flavor for what information we're gathering. We have done pedestrian counts at various crossings. This one is at Broome and Wilson. Each person there is 10 pedestrians, right? So this is a relatively lightly utilized intersection for peds, maybe because it isn't such a great intersection, and bikes as well. This one is a little more prominent, Pinckney and Wilson, by the Judge Doyle Construction Garage. You can see the black lines are indicating where people weren't using because of the construction. So maybe, you know, a lot of those that you're seeing there would be using the other side of the street, for example. But we have that for many intersections along the corridor. MLK is another very heavily used intersection for pedestrians. We've done some crash analysis. Crash data that we're still taking a look at. An important issue that we want to talk about is bike routing and connectivity through this area. And how we do it, whether we use Wilson Street or a parallel street, we don't quite know yet. We know that Wilson Street is not great for bicycling, and this is from our planning processes. You can see it's been identified along with other streets that it's in need of some improvement and that, again, you don't see a lot of cyclists using it because it's not a great facility. But still, there's a very strong need to get up and serve that development and link it to the path system that we've made such a tremendous investment in over the last several years. This is an image to show you how bad crossing John Nolan is to the path. It's a three-stage crossing, right, Gretchen? And if you're on a bike, that's really all you have to do is get off your bike, and unless you want to take the lane, you're a pedestrian. And it takes a very long time. People get frustrated, and for such an important linkage, it's something that we're looking at very carefully as part of this project. Metro uses this route extensively. A number of different routes, as you can see, are using it, going in many different directions. So very important for Metro and something we're going to be talking about with the community as we move forward, including bus rapid transit, which is not to get off on a side tangent, but we're going to be starting that project in a couple months as well. So how we route bus rapid transit through the downtown to serve campus is still kind of an open question. Obviously, you want it to move quickly. Maybe Wilson Street could be an option that we utilize rather than hitting the square and getting bogged down on State Street. So there's a difference of opinions among staff as well as to what's the best option for BRT in addition to these local routes. So we'd love to show you more information on parking occupancy. We don't have that yet. We are working with Parking Utility. They're being helpful in conducting occupancy during a few different times of the day in a few different days of the week, so we'll have a good sense for how much parking is utilized in this corridor, not just parking for customers who are paying and doing business down here or commuters or handicapped people, but also loading zones. There are a lot of businesses that use loading zones, and we heard that when Wilson Street was rebuilt last year. So goals and objectives. We really want to hear from you. Are we on the right track? We're going to be presenting these to the public, and we've come up with our own. But are we missing anything at this point? Obviously, safe and comfortable pedestrian crossings are at the top of the list. We want this to be a walkable area and to continue that. Improving the bike connection from the west and from the path system. Again, something I mentioned probably three times. We really need to give that careful consideration. Parking, I mentioned, how do we provide convenient places for people to park and for loading activities that are important to business functionality. Having a healthy canopy is very important. Trees, everybody loves trees. You know, any alder will tell you, you know, you take a tree down and that's really very, very serious business. But there are many trees throughout the corridor that are probably slated for removal because they're ash trees or they're not healthy. We just haven't heard back from forestry yet. They're very busy this time of year with planting, fall planting, they tell us. So we're hoping by the first PIM we can have that information to share with the public. But even if we don't, I think it's fine. When we have alternatives, when we start developing alternatives, we'll definitely want to know what trees are going because that may, you know, create an opportunity for us to do something different in the terrace or throughout the right-of-way. So that's something that's coming. Metro operations, obviously, I mentioned, very important to keep transit moving through this important destination, and then also preserving existing investments. We've rebuilt the curbs in many places, and we don't want to simply go out there and you know, chop those up and do something completely different. So if it's really, really necessary, I guess the city has done that in the past, and we'll consider it, but we don't want to rip up something that we just built. So are there others that we can write down and give some thought to as we get ready for our first PIM, which, by the way, is November 8th. We already have it scheduled. It's a 7 p.m. meeting in our brand new MMB, mm-hmm. which we're excited about. And then the second PIM would be taking the information I just presented you and actually having some alternatives to share with the public, including not sure exactly how we're going to present it, but we think that, you know, having a matrix that shows the trade-offs of the different alternatives and how well they meet one objective or another objective or not so much another objective is the format that we'd like to do for that second meeting. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions and hear feedback on objectives that you think we're...
Do you want to go back to the goals so that people can see them again if you're looking for feedback on those in particular? Comments, Gary?
Question, David. And I certainly applaud the goals and objectives concerning pedestrian crossings and the bike connection and parking needs. Has there been any kind of look to how the traffic flows in that area, automobile traffic flows, and how maybe we can improve that in some fashion, either by switching one ways to two ways, or is that part of this?
Not explicitly. I think, you know, we're going to be talking about alternate corridors for all modes, you know, through this area.
Yeah.
We are looking at traffic volumes. Tom, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, actually, we are taking intersection counts and we'll model the intersections, particularly There's really three key intersections. One is the Broome and Wilson. One is the Hamilton and Wilson, and then one is the King Street and Wilson. So we will model those, and we probably, unless we're asked to, we probably won't go into switching the one-way to two-way operation, but if someone says you really need to look at that, we'll look at that.
Yeah, obviously buses are motor vehicles, and they need to go through the area too. So
I think some of the primary challenges are right there in the Broome and Wilson.
Yeah.
Because, the left, so the eastbound left turn from John Nolan to Broome to Wilson, facilitating that movement, and then if you're trying to provide space for other modes, how do you do that? You know, it's a complicated. They also don't have a lot of stacking room on Broome, on southbound Broome.
Yeah.
So that's probably the most challenging. That also has 39 crashes, which kind of surprised. Mm-hmm. I mean, surprised me. I didn't realize there were that many crashes at that intersection. So,
which Broome and Wilson?
Yeah.
That intersection, as opposed to John Nolan.
Yeah, it actually has more than John Nolan, than the intersection with John Nolan. Yeah.
That's 5 years here. Yeah.
Ash?
Just in terms of the crashes, I was wondering what your analysis showed. Was it, what kind of crashes are they? Are they mostly rear ends, and who's mostly impacted? Are they pedestrians or bikers, or is it mostly cars getting crashes?
Okay, so I actually have the information, and they're mostly angle crashes, and I'm talking about all the crashes on Wilson. Involving pedestrians, we only have 3, and bikes, we only have 4, and that's for 5 years.
And were they pedestrian, bike, car interactions as well?
I'll need to check. I do have that information, and I can look for specifically each crash, and I can find out.
Sure. And also, I was wondering about the pedestrian volume counts there. I couldn't really make out with the little stick figures
what
the actual numbers were.
So here we have each little walking person is equal to 10 pedestrians. Mm-hmm. So the south leg of Broome Street right here has 4, so it'll be 40. Around 40.
Yeah.
Can you also explain what's the time frame?
Yes, so what we did is we took counts, we collected pedestrian counts during the peak hours and then converted that to a 24-hour period with a factor. So that would be one day, during one day.
And the next intersection?
Yeah. So the other one over here, on the east side of Wilson, we have about 470 pedestrians crossing, and on the south side of Pinckney, we have 570.
And did you do bicycle counts as well?
When we take our train movements for vehicles, we do take the numbers for bikes too. I will need to check the data to make sure that we have that for all, if you want that information.
Okay.
It might be a little bit biased because you got some of the construction.
Could you speak in a mic for people who
just come up.
Why don't you just come up to the table? Join us to the table. Yep.
All right, now I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to stop talking. It might be a little bit non-representative because we have the JDS construction right there, which basically is taken away. So a cyclist right now has to take the lane on Wilson Street for the east portion. So,
go ahead, Bill.
You haven't spoken to the railroad crossing on Broome Street. Are you going to look at that? I think you need to look at that to see if there can be any changes made with how that, when those trains do come through, how you clear the traffic and if there's any efficiencies you can make and how many trains a day go through there.
It varies. I think anywhere from 10 to 15 per day. This is a main line for Watco or Wisconsin Southern to go to Janesville. They have a lot of activity that way. This is probably the busiest part of their entire network in the city. I do know that.
And I think when they do go through, and then when they close, where does this traffic continue on? They don't stop at Broome. They can't make a left turn at Broome. So if it's a long train, they'll just go further on, go all the way to the east side, I guess. Or maybe. I mean, I don't know how many people do that.
I don't know. I'm sure we've never modeled
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
There's
an,
on that. So when trains comes, we provide an preemption for trains.
Yep.
So make sure we clear out all the completing vehicles from the tracks so that everyone is safe. So after that, as you said, when the trains go through, we just keep the movement that's compatible with that movement, car traffic. So that's general and dry, let's keep it going the whole time. So that time depends on how many cars on the train. Sometimes a relatively short amount of time, sometimes a very long time. So when it's a very long time for a long train, we increase our backup, for example, on Broome Street, as you mentioned, and also for the inbound left turn from Gatlinburg to Wilson, as well as that one. We have two left turn lanes. We notice that sometimes it does fill up, and sometimes even blocking further down.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have been keeping close attention on that over the past few years, has been doing kind of timing tweaks on that. I think we right now we're at a pretty good efficient setup for when that happens, but things may change, traffic volume may change, also the train operation will change. So we'll keep monitoring that and do our best to make it as efficient and as safe as possible.
You have not mentioned it, but I assume then that we have no crash history at that crossing?
For train crashes?
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's probably zero. We would have heard about it.
Yeah. Right. But you haven't mentioned it, so I was assuming
no.
that's the case, but I think maybe some people might be interested in it. But when those, I guess that spillback, that might be, there's rear enders then maybe back on John Nolan as a result of backups.
Yeah, that's another mode for this intersection as another layer of a complexity to it.
Mm-hmm. Ash?
And just to go back to the crash data again, I'd be also curious to see, what the crashes resulted in, whether it was property damage or injury crashes, just so we can get a better idea of the priorities there.
We had a total of 31 injuries and no fatalities, but if you want more detailed information, you can definitely work on that.
Okay, that'd be great.
Yes, Ken.
I know it's probably premature, but you must have been doing some brainstorming. I mean, I want to first say good luck with that, because given the parameter of the footprint for that intersection, what kind of brainstorming have you done as far as what the alternatives are? I mean, I'm genuinely curious. You sort of seems like because of property and things like that, you can't get more than three lanes out of that last piece of Wilson Street. So what brainstorming have you done?
A little bit. I mean, that's really what the next phase is going to be.
Okay.
We want to see what the analysis tells us and whether there's opportunities for other corridors to divert some of the traffic to something.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. What do you want to say about that?
Why does somebody drag a chair up? You drag a chair up for Tom.
As we'd say in court, off the record.
Yeah, actually there's
Here's a chair, Tom.
Oh, good.
Thank you, Chair.
You're up here.
Yeah, just for a second. It's a very constrained intersection. But there's been a number of creative solutions that people have suggested in our engineering department, and right now they're a secret. But I think it'll be difficult to get the optimal solution, but I think that there's some good solutions that could address these modes. Certainly things that are certainly a better configuration than what exists right now.
I just add that if we had a cooperative railroad there would be quite a few different options that would be close to optimal, where you could, you know, create a very protected bike facility, for example, along the rail corridor, using a lightly used Hamilton Street, for example. But we don't have that right now. So we continue to maybe make that long-term planning, but we need to do something now.
Very diplomatic, David.
Jessica.
I guess that was part of my question is, you know, are we what are we talking about here in terms of near-term versus medium-term versus long-term planning? And I guess corollary is I understand there have been some, either there have been studies or there's been discussion of doing long-term studies involving the Blair Street, John Nolan intersection, which obviously impacts this Wilson interchange as well on the east side, kind of in tandem with talks about, like, Law Park and, you know, it would make sense for that whole area to be part of that study, and I would hope that, you know, whatever we're talking about kind of in the near term would be compatible with any progress that has been made on longer range studies, and maybe including the Monona Terrace options with some existing infrastructure that exists at Monona Terrace.
Yeah, we've thought quite a bit about that with the South Capitol study that was done a few years ago, creating a bridge connection to Law Park, for example, that would really help alleviate some of the problems. Right now, there's a short-term improvement for Blair Street, one next year, and I think one in 2021, where that would move the driveways, the machinery road driveways away, add some left turn lanes. Yang's working on a design on that now. That will make a significant improvement, but beyond that, we're really our focus is that we want to rebuild this one block here between Broome and Hamilton. So if we build it, we want to make sure that it is compatible with a long-term vision for the entire corridor. That's sort of right to the point of why we're looking at it at this point, so we don't build something and then, oh, it didn't work for what we ultimately wanted to do.
Do we have that long-term vision? Has that long-term vision been established?
No, this is part of what we're hoping to do.
In conjunction with the long-term vision of the entire
That's right.
Section.
Yeah, and I think it'd be a good idea for Chris to come talk about that Blair Street project at some point to this committee. If you haven't already done that, or Yang could as well.
No, that'd be good.
Yeah, we have just done that extensive at the previous committees, but I think it's a pretty good idea to do that in front of this committee as well.
So, Jessica, if I can just paraphrase, could you go back to the goals, David, that you have there? Are you suggesting that the goals and objectives, one of them would be that anything that's done would be compatible with a long-term vision in the area?
I would suggest that would be a goal, and maybe even that, you know, within the scope of this, that we could look at a broader, you know, a broader section of that street that John Nolan, you know, kind of Wilson and John Nolan in tandem. That may be too much just for the scope of this project, but I would hope that we're thinking about it all in context, and that would be a goal.
Ash, when you were talking about biking earlier, there was a lot of discussion about bike lanes. Is there anything about bike lanes in the goals?
We generically improve the bike connection. So we don't call for a lane or a separated lane or protected lane or anything at that level yet. When we have alternatives, I'm sure some of them that are on the table will be specific.
So connection would include that?
That's what we mean. It's just improve the connection. Could make it more explicit, if you like.
I don't know. What do people think, Rebecca?
So I understand this is before this body and not the Transportation Policy and Planning Board because of the budget amendment, and there's an expedited timeline, so we're almost at the point of talking actual cross-sections. But to Jessica's point, I think a lot of that thinking and work is going to come before the Transportation Policy and Planning Board, correct, Tom?
I think the purpose of the study is to establish a more comprehensive view of the corridor, and so that's why instead of studying just two blocks or repeating what was done in the previous two blocks, we're going to look at the whole thing. Okay, it's a relatively quick time frame. It would be better if we had 6 months or a year, but we'll move forward. This will be great. We'll do it.
As far as goals and objectives, I think it's very, I think it's good to establish what you want to occur, but not legislate alternatives within your goals.
Mm-hmm.
If you say provide bike lanes or buffered bike lanes to the square, well, what you've done is you've basically legislated an alternative rather than allowing a breadth of alternatives to provide that function.
Mm-hmm.
So the function that we want to provide is a bicycle connection from the west to the square and also from the east to the square, but the east is set up a little bit better. You know, there's more room on the east, so maybe that should be from the west and the east. Maybe let's make that.
Okay.
And then, Gary, I think you made a good point that we should there should be something also in there about motor vehicle operations. It's a entrance. It's probably the primary entrance of most visitors to Madison or through is through
John Nolan Drive.
John Nolan Drive. And so and most of those visitors are in a car, right? And so we want that to be an inviting experience. And so that's a good it's a good thing that we should add to our goals and objectives.
And so to kind of follow up on that line of thinking, as a former member of the former Ped Bike and Motor Vehicle Commission, and you just mentioned how the previous two blocks were done, it was really disheartening for, you know, to hear you say, Dave, that, you know, there is no, there is no good biking alternatives on Wilson Street when we actually had an opportunity to build that last year, but because of the process and how things got done and because we didn't take the approach we're taking now, we didn't build those even though there kind of were plans for that. And in that whole process that was quite muddled and contentious, City Engineering talked about our ability to change how the right-of-way is used. Like, it wasn't built to the optimal width for protected bike lanes at the time, but there are some things we can do with parking and painting in the future, especially when Judge Doyle is done and on East Wilson Street to improve that. Mm-hmm. So, but I just have to point out that was kind of a missed opportunity.
Can I respond to that?
You can, and then also one more question, which is about the PIM process and the kind of outreach you're doing. Could you describe what you're doing to broadcast the opportunity for members of the public to participate more than just mailing cards to neighbors?
More than just mailing
cards? I mean, is that what you're doing, just mailing cards to neighbors, or is there a broader public outreach effort?
This is a relatively quick time frame. So we are mailing cards even next week for the first one, which is the goals and objectives. Perhaps we could actually, that's a good thing. We could perhaps alert some of the constituency groups and state that this is occurring as well. I think the goals and objectives will be largely information giving,
mm-hmm.
and less perhaps might generate less discussion but more input. But the second one in December, it would be good to have a broad audience. So actually, suggestions, you know, perhaps letting Madison Bikes know about this. Madison Bikes, that's correct.
Well, and because it is, like, yeah. What we went through last year was this tension between people who see Wilson Street as their neighborhood street and then the actual regional use for transit for, you know, it's a regional corridor, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a, like we said, it's, so reaching out to more than just the people who see the street as their neighborhood is important.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
That's a great suggestion.
I think I already kind of alerted some of the groups,
including Madison Bikes, DMI Bike Committee.
Yeah,
so they know it's coming, but they don't know the date yet, but they know it's coming.
Okay.
Well, actually, we do know the dates. We just established them in the last couple of days.
Right.
So
we'll let them know.
Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
That's okay. I didn't mean to say that there aren't good alternatives for bikes on Wilson Street. I didn't mean to say that. I said right now people aren't choosing
because
it isn't a good alternative,
right.
Period.
Right.
And
you're right.
So there are lots of options on the table, and we're going to be going through them all. Don't be disheartened.
No, it's not about what you said. It's about the reality of, you know, missed opportunities.
Okay, you guys both did it at the same time. So how about Ash and then Jessica?
Can you help me understand, as a new member, what is the time, what dictates these timelines, and why is this a tight timeline, and how do these timelines get determined?
I think ideally it would be nice if we could work this a year in advance. I think Alder Vivier placed this as an amendment to the budget, primarily out of concern, I think, for some utility repairs that just were chronic on these two blocks. But to do that, you know, to build something in the summer of 2019, you have to design it in the winter of 2019. Now. And so what we'll do is we'll go through the process. We'll see if we can come to some good solutions in January, February. And if it requires more iterations or input, we'll just work the process and do what's right. I think because it is only a two-block section, it could be bid and it could be constructed later in the season. But when these amendments were made, and this, I think this is not an uncommon thing. You know, alders advocate for infrastructure needs that they have in their district. I think what's new is that rather than just looking at these projects as two-block sections, we would like to look at it more holistically. So in this particular instance, we're a little bit behind the curve, or behind the timeline, but you know, we'll work the process, we'll establish goals and objectives, evaluate alternatives, and just see how we can make the process go.
I just also wanted to maybe hear from Metro if there's any issues on this corridor that we should be thinking about while we set priorities or goals.
Can you come to a mic, Chuck, please?
Our staff will be working very closely with Dave and Tim Sabota. Drew Beck's staff will be working through there. In addition to the routes you saw up there, I think Route 10 also goes through this corridor. It is not currently a BRT line, but we've asked ourselves one day, should we look for that kind of thing? But our staff will be very involved in it so that we address some of the issues that we have in terms of keeping buses on time and making transfers at the transfer points. This is a bottleneck where you may not see that at the transfer points, but the bottlenecks occur in key intersections like this. So we'll be very involved.
Do you have any other advice for us in thinking from a Metro perspective?
Just that the transit priority, and Dave has this on his slide, continue to be right up there. I mean, we are certainly wanting pedestrian bike safety. That helps us with our drivers. But transit speed is a key component of what we're trying to do in terms of getting people to where they need to go in a timely manner and not miss their transfer points. And looking at every choke point like these is key to do that. And I think the folks involved in this are talking with our staff to get that input.
Thank you, Chuck.
Yep.
Would anybody mind if I ask Chuck a question since he's already up here? David, could you flip to the next slide? So it says efficient metro operations. Would you like to say safe and efficient or something? I mean, we talk a lot about safety all the time, and this is a goal. So are there safety issues here? Or
if you were to put efficient and safe metro and other transportation operations, that would be certainly appropriate.
Okay.
We are part of that multimodal mix, and emphasizing that would be good.
Yeah. So if you want to just maybe work with Chuck on that particular goal to make sure it's broad enough to cover what they have. Other suggestions for Jessica?
One more question as it pertains to the goals and objectives. what are the prospects for adding a goal and objective maybe to this, or certainly as we look at projects in the future, of engaging a representative from the railroad in these discussions? I don't know the backstory there. I don't know how feasible that is, but it certainly seems like it would be a good goal or objective.
Maybe.
Tom. Sorry to ask you to come back.
I think I might have a loaded question. I didn't mean it to be.
No, I think this is a great idea. I would word it differently, like using, you know, seeking creative solutions within the railroad right of way. That's, I think, what would be.
So that brings
short,
forward
short
that,
and or long term mm-hmm. solutions, and that would imply getting
just to bring that
to get that on
into
paper
the,
and to talk
yeah,
about
and
it.
To bring that into the yeah. mix, since as William pointed out, it is an integral part of that intersection.
Okay, yeah. And Gary's comment about autos, you were going to add that in. Okay, yep. I'm just trying to make sure that everything that people brought forward is incorporated in some real good discussion. Did we want to talk about any other ideas that people have with regard to publicizing, since there's such a short timeline here? Good ways to get the word out, because I think this is not only you mentioned the neighborhood, but you also mentioned a lot of people pass through here, whether it's in vehicles, on bikes, walking, whatever. So to get the word out to anybody who might have some interest in attending, what suggestions do people have? Rebecca?
I think Yang has a list of transportation-related groups and
okay.
people who are typically interested in this kind of thing, and just make sure the outreach happens.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm on the team on that.
Great discussion. Other comments? Ash?
Just one final point again to the safety aspect, specifically to do with Metro. I just want to make the comment that we shouldn't be singling out Metro for any sort of safety issues. In fact, I feel like if we have efficient public transportation on a street, that actually improves safety for all mm-hmm. users of the street. Mm-hmm. And these are train drivers who are using the system, and unlike, a lot of other people in cars. And so I think we should really be looking at the entire picture when we put in any wording about safety and not single out Madison Metro specifically for that.
Okay, so maybe move it to its own point or something, David? Does that work?
So
I don't know if you want to
fostering safe multimodal solutions, something like that.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Because I noticed safe is in some of them, but not in other ones. So maybe just pull safety out, and that's great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good suggestion, yep. Other suggestions? I had to keep my head on a swivel here to make sure I get everybody.
Just remembering the discussion last year over those other two blocks of Wilson, some analysis of parking in the area, on-street parking. If on-street parking were to be removed, where's the off-street parking? Parking garages, public and private parking garages in the area, how they could be used, et cetera, et cetera. Loading for some of the businesses, if that could be part of
yep.
the scope of or goals or objectives, getting a handle on that.
Well, we say satisfy parking needs. Do you think it should be more granular?
Maybe that loading as well.
Because it's not, what I'm getting at is like. You're talking about the right of way. We're talking about planning for the street. And can the street itself satisfy the parking needs, or I guess.
Are there alternates?
Broader, let's look at, right, yeah, broader.
I think maybe what you're asking is for, could some of that data be part of the existing conditions? We
yeah.
will have a parking inventory and occupancy, but also making known where there are public parking garage opportunities and the number of spaces available in those, so that that's part of the context where
yes.
the alternatives are evaluated.
Yeah.
In.
That's it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Other comments or suggestions? or questions? Great discussion.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, thanks very much. Okay. Engineering department referrals.
Wait.
Nope.
One more.
Oh, Bassett. I skipped Bassett. I'm so sorry. Sorry about that. I apologize. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Don't worry about it.
We combined them into one agenda item, so I was too fast with my checking. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
I'm Mike Chekfala. I'm a transportation planner for the city's new Department of Transportation.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Alexandra Heinrichs, and I'm a traffic engineer in the city.
Okay, so Bassett Street is a similar project planning corridor study. So we're going to kind of go through this. A lot of it's going to be duplicative from what you've just heard from Wilson Street. So we were taking notes as we were talking about Wilson Street. So, you know, hopefully we can incorporate that as it applies to Bassett as well. This is the study area. It's Bassett Street from where it starts at Gorham Street. Comes southbound as a one-way street and then wraps around as Wilson Street. And then we will actually tie into the same intersection that Wilson Street touched at Wilson and Broome. And then we will look at the corridor as well, Bassett Street, as it extends past where most of the traffic turns on Wilson and goes to the railroad tracks and across the railroad to where the logical connection at North Shore Drive and John Nolan. We do actually have an established railroad crossing at Bassett Street there, and so we'll talk about how bikes and pedestrians might kind of use that in the future. Similar to Wilson Street, we're also looking at two blocks of reconstruction of Bassett Street between where we left off at Dayton Street and West Washington Avenue. So the section between Gorham and Dayton was recently rebuilt, so we're likely not looking at significant changes there. We'd like to maintain the investment that we have there, but again, we're looking at the entire corridor. So here's a photo of the new section that was recently finished, looking as you approach Johnson Street. I know the lighting here is not perfect, but we do have the handouts. If you haven't picked one up, go ahead and pick one up. But the cycle track on each side is kind of seen there, and then there's two lanes going southbound. Here is the older section between Dayton Street and Mifflin, which you're looking at here. And this section essentially, more or less, continues around two through lanes, bike lane, parking lane, sidewalks both sides, terrace with trees. And here's a cross-section showing that. So this is a new section, again, showing the two travel lanes going southbound, cycle track, split with one direction on each side, and then here is the majority of it past Dayton Street. Two travel lanes, parking and bikes, terrace and sidewalks. And then once you wrap around to Wilson Street, the two travel lanes, the two through lanes continue. The parking actually switches to the other side, to the left side, and the bike lane goes away. So here's just a map of the bike facilities. So we have the orange lines, there are bike lanes. The blue line on Main Street is what in the bike plan we call the bike priority street. It's a lower volume local street that that the city has put investments, for instance, around like the Capitol Square area with the counterflow lane and Sharrows and things like that. So it's a local street with the intention of being a good route for cyclists. The brown dotted line on Bassett Street shows the cycle track. And so this is kind of going up a level and looking at some of the kind of major travel patterns. We treat the thick green lines, you know, fairly well. You know, the Capital City Trail path is on the, you know, along Lake Monona. And we have the Main Street Bike Priority Street. You know, Johnson Gorham University sort of works pretty well. What we're really missing is a connection from John Nolan Drive through the Broome Bassett couplet one way or another into campus and University Avenue. So that's going to be kind of a key focus on this planning study. And there's more than one way we could do that, but it is a missing link. Traffic volumes on the corridor, they peak. The busiest section is between Dayton and West Wash, about 6,000 cars a day. It's, you know, significant, but it's not overwhelming. We pick up a lot of traffic from the Johnson Street as traffic, you know, comes down Johnson Street and then makes the right turn and continues to West Wash or John Nolan or Wilson, wherever they're going. Drops off a little bit after West Wash. Metro is a fairly significant corridor for Metro. A lot of shorter trips from this area into campus, particularly the 110, 19, 38 kind of go through, and then they kind of fan off and go different ways. The 1 and 19 to the square, and then the 10 and 38 to the east side. And thinking about bus rapid transit some more, we don't know how BRT is going to go through the downtown area, but it quite possibly could end up on Bassett Street in one place or another. So we want to keep that in our mind, is that the transit volumes and importance of this corridor could go up if we decide that BRT should use Bassett Street, either from Johnson to West Wash or Johnson to Wilson or some other thing. Parking, so, you know, most of the block faces on Bassett Street have, you know, two-hour permit parking south of Dayton. There's no parking between Gorham and Dayton. We've done some occupancy studies on that. Anecdotally, you know, most of the parking in this neighborhood does fill up. There's simply more, you know, cars than there's more demand than there is supply most of the time, but we will look and get more detail on that. The red splotches on this map are the bus stops, and then there's one loading zone by near side of Main Street there. So that's, you know, loading, I think it's just during the daytime. I think it opens up after a certain time. So goals and objectives, we don't have this presented as graphically, visually appealing as the Wilson Street crew did, but it's should be pretty similar. I'm going to go through them quickly, and you can read them, and we'll just finish up, and then we'll come back and talk to them about them some more. So provide safe and comfortable pedestrian crossings, improve bike connections to the east, satisfy parking needs, preserve healthy tree canopy and terrace, provide ordered motor vehicle flow, provide safe and efficient metro operations, preserve existing investments, and anything else we might hear today or from our public information meeting. And then I'll just quickly go through our timetable. We have a public information meeting Monday, November 26th, 7 p.m. Madison Senior Center, going over the existing conditions, goals, and objectives. Essentially this slideshow with probably a little bit more detail. The second one is scheduled for December 11th, 7 p.m. Senior Center. We're looking at alternatives and then coming back to the Transportation Commission with recommendations after that. And then essentially we'd like to start design for the section between Dayton and West Wash as soon as possible, and then construction in the summer. So that concludes my presentation. Open up to any questions, comments. We'll go back to the goals and objectives to park there. Unless you had anything to add, Ellie?
No, covered it all.
So, Mike, I just want to summarize. You said that you were going to take the feedback that was given by the commissioners for Wilson Street and apply those same changes to these goals and objectives for Bassett. Are people interested in that?
Sure.
Okay. So other comments or questions? Jessica?
So I understand just from this initial map that the area just to the west of that tennis court that's in the park, I think that's an extension of Brittingham Park, is part of the study area, but there's not a defined plan right now to connect that roadway, or is that part of the study as well?
It's the study corridor does go south of the cul-de-sac or the dead end where Bassett Street meets the railroad corridor. We haven't presented any alternatives, but I think the main goal is to provide a ped and bike connection.
Okay. Yeah. I would say, from my perspective, I think another goal, since this is somewhat unique in that it goes through park space, would be to preserve, along with the tree canopy, preserve to the extent possible the park space and the pedestrian bike experience in park space.
Good point.
Other comments? Ash?
And again, like the Wilson Street corridor, as much data as you can get about pedestrian bike numbers and crashes and just, what kind of safety issues vulnerable users especially face in that corridor would be great because it's, a lot of students there as well.
Yeah, thanks. So one thing, so we do have some of the preliminary crash data pulled. One thing that I noticed was one of the crashes that we've seen, more than one occurrence of is people making the left turn from the right lane.
Yeah.
Ooh. Not good. Other comments or questions? Okay, well, if you want to maybe work with David and share notes, I think that we had a lot of good conversation on the other that applies here as well. And the same with regard to the how to publicize the hearings as well. So it sounds like, yeah, you've got a lot of the good connection information for that as well. Excuse me.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Now, how about engineering department referrals? Thanks much. Bye.
All right. My name is Jeremy Nash. I'm an engineer for traffic engineering.
My name is Andy Zwig. I'm from City Engineering, and I'm the project manager for this project.
And we're here to talk to you about Pleasant View Road. Just a quick overview. We're going to be talking about the project location and limits, the purpose and need, alternatives, and the evaluation of the alternatives. And a reason, just kind of why I'm here today, is I want to introduce the project, gather any feedback that you guys have, and I will be back later for an approval of geometrics. So the project team consists of the City of Madison, the City of Middleton, as well as Strand Associates. So it's a kind of quick overview of the project location and limits. You can see on the left side of the screen is Mineral Point Road. It starts just north of there, where a previous project had left off, and spans all the way up to the University Avenue, US 14 intersection with Pleasant View. And it is worth noting there are different municipal limits. So the City of Madison spans from Mineral Point Road up to Blackhawk Road and part of that intersection, And then between Black Hawk Road and Greenway Boulevard, it is the municipal limit runs right kind of down the middle of the road, and then north of Greenway Boulevard is within the city of Middleton. So purpose and need, we want to meet the mobility needs of West Madison. We want to complete the arterial network. As you can see, it spans Middleton, Madison, and Verona. It provide bicycle and pedestrian accommodations and provide safe and reasonable access to properties along the corridor. So here's a quick look at the existing and projected traffic volumes. You can see rough counts in the locations where they were taken, as well as a percent increase. And this is from now until 2038, so 20 years from now. You see the biggest growth will be between Mineral Point and Elderberry. We'll get 48% increase and 22 and 21% respectively as you move further north. And as a quick crash history, there have been 6 crashes at the intersection of Elderberry and Pleasant View Road, 6 crashes at Blackhawk and Pleasant View Road, as well as 4 crashes at Greenway Boulevard and Pleasant View Road. So to quickly touch on the bicycle considerations in Act 59, the power of condemnation may not be used for the purpose of establishing or extending a recreational trail, a bicycle way, et cetera, et cetera. So the takeaway from this provision influences the typical section and where bicycle and pedestrian facilities can be placed within the right-of-way. So now I'm going to walk through the mainline alternatives, and then after this I will walk through the intersection alternatives as well. So existing out there right now, we have 2 11-foot lanes, one in each direction. No real bicycle accommodations. There's nothing kind of besides those 2 lanes. Alternative 1 is to have two 11-foot lanes in each direction, as long as an 8-foot shoulder on either side. Alternative 2 is similar to alternative 1, except it also has a 21-foot median in the middle, but also has those two lanes in each direction along with the shoulder. And alternative 3 is our likely preferred alternative, but it has 4 11-foot lanes, 2 in each direction, 21-foot median, 8-foot shoulders, and a 12-foot multi-use path. So here's an evaluation matrix, kind of looking at all the alternatives. So the no build of the existing, obviously, is the most red on it. And as you move further right, alternative 1 has some yellow in it, somewhat. It addresses safety issues more. It does meet the future traffic demand with the 2 lanes in each direction. Does provide better pedestrian and bike accommodations than the no-build alternative. It requires a little bit more acquisition of right-of-way. It provides better access than the no-build. It does, due to the acquisition of right-of-way and expanding of the footprint, does have some environmental impacts. Alternative 2 is similar, but it provides better access due to that median. You can allow for turn bays in there. And alternative 3, which is our preferred alternative, has the most green and the least red. It is the best alternative at addressing safety, does meet the future traffic demand, provides the best pedestrian and bicycle accommodations, and provides the best access as well. Now let's take a look at the intersection alternatives. So first we'll take a look at Elderberry Road. So currently Elderberry Road is a stop-controlled intersection for the east-west, and north-south is not does not have any control on it. And so the proposal is to keep it stop-controlled at this time until such a time occurs that it meets warrants to be signalized, and it could be signalized in the future, but currently there just isn't does not meet the warrants for it. There's a lot of different factors that go into that. And alternative 2 is a roundabout here. You can see there are 2 lanes north-south and 1 lane east-west through the roundabout. So our likely preferred alternative is the roundabout alternative. It does help control speeds throughout the corridor. It does reduce both the crash frequency and the crash severity. It does require a slightly bigger footprint than the signalized or stop-controlled intersection, but does provide better pedestrian crossing because currently is not signalized, and it would be it's more difficult to find a break in traffic versus here you have shorter pedestrian crossings. So next we'll look at Black Hawk Road. So the first alternative for Black Hawk Road is a signal-controlled intersection, as you can see here. 2 through lanes in each direction, left turn bays for every direction as well. and you can get a feel for this sort of intersection. And the second alternative is, again, a roundabout alternative. It does require a slightly bigger footprint as well, but similar to the last roundabout, you know, two lanes north-south and one lane east-west. So taking a look at this, again, it does, you know, would help address the speed issues throughout the corridor. It would, you know, provide better, you know, safer, it would provide a lower crash frequency and crash severity. It does have the bigger footprint, so it is slightly, has a slightly bigger footprint. So as the signal would have a better right-of-way acquisition in that prospect. And in this case, since it would be signalized in the future when we would be building it, it would provide better pedestrian cross accommodations because the signal would allow for a pedestrian crossing phase. And the last intersection we want to take a look at is Greenway Boulevard. So this is the alternative one, is the signalized intersection, as you can see here, to three lanes in each direction, you know, left and right turn lane off of Greenway, right turn lane off of northbound Pleasant View Road onto Greenway, as we're at Greenway, and a left turn bay for southbound traffic. And here is the roundabout alternative, similar to the other roundabouts we have looked at. One interesting thing about this one is that the roundabout actually has a smaller footprint than the signalized intersection, which is different than the other roundabouts, and you can see this reflected here. So it does have a smaller footprint, so therefore the roundabout has the X for right-of-way acquisition. But again, the decreased crash frequency as well as crash severity and helps address speeds. So attention to schedule, what we're looking at. Phase one would be from University Avenue, US 14, down to Greenway. That would be slated for 2021 construction. And then from there, the next phase would be 2022 and go down to Old Sauk Road. And phase three would be from Old Sauk Road down to Mineral Point Road from in 2023. And quick, again, also with attention to the schedule, design started September of last year. Will carry through to August of 2020. And right-of-way acquisition will start in spring of next year, and that typically lasts 12 months. And does anyone have any questions?
Yeah. What's the posted speed on this road?
Blanking my mind. I believe it's 35 miles an hour.
Okay. And the majority of the crashes that you have indicated, were they speed-induced or running stop signs or what? Any analysis there?
I would be happy to take a look at that for you. I can say that they are angled crashes.
Angled crashes.
The intersection is correct.
Okay.
Can you go back to the alternatives?
Yeah, absolutely. Alternative or mainline or intersections?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you talk about the environmental impacts at the bottom there?
Sure.
What exactly do they mean? What does that mean?
We have two cemeteries on the project. We have one at Old Sauk and one just north of Old Sauk. As you widened, the road to four lanes, we've avoided. So along the old German cemetery, it's just north of Old Sauk, between Old Sauk and Blackhawk. The right-of-way is a little wider there. We were able to bend the whole four lanes away from the cemetery to avoid any impacts to the cemetery beyond the right-of-way. We have found out recently that there are no wetlands, on the project. Other environmental impacts are increasing the impervious area, so we'll have to kind of store that water in ponds, throughout the corridor at locations that we haven't really talked about too much yet until we kind of get the geometry established.
And can you also talk to how the condemnation law affected your choosing the alternatives as well? Like, where was the bike lane supposed to be in another configuration, or did that have an effect at all?
So I guess the law has had, you know, pretty significant impacts on the geometry. Now, we're putting in a bike lane. We're not calling it a bike lane. We already had one public meeting. We didn't say it was a bike lane. I believe it's 6 feet wide, 8 feet wide.
8 feet total.
Eight feet total. That includes the gutter. So we're just calling it a shoulder. It'll have a stripe on the edge of the lane. It just, as of right now, we wouldn't show a bicycle paint mark. I guess that would be the only difference. We can use that shoulder for disabled vehicles. We can use that shoulder for snow storage. We can use that shoulder for, you know, maintenance. That shoulder can be used if emergency vehicles can get past. So we've kind of worked our way around that portion by not calling it that. As far as the Madison section, we're able to still put in the bike path for the most part, because there are certain properties through the city real estate process that we can't condemn. From Mineral Point to Elderberry is owned by the university, so we wouldn't, you know, which is owned by the state, and we can't condemn the state. So we'll just work with them in the real estate process. Same with MG&E owns property along our portion. We can't condemn them either. But there is a portion just north of Elderberry. There's a church. So we've ended the bike path at the church, and we put sidewalk in through that parcel and then picked up the bike path on the other side of that. That's kind of odd, but we've done that because the way the DOT views the law is you can condemn for sidewalk when it's kind of related to the street project. That part of the law has kind of changed, I guess, as the DOT has kind of loosened their stance on the law a little bit, and our city attorney, I guess, has agreed with the DOT's stance on it. Middleton has a lot of other issues. Most of their bike path will be on private property or future right-of-way, so they're not able to put it in. So that bike path will end where the bike crossing is in Middleton by the golf course, if you know the corridor at all.
Thank you.
Just what is the main advantage of the median? I'm guessing it's safety, but I don't know anything about engineering. I know I like to drive on those more than I like to drive on the others, but what is that?
So I guess some, medians provide, a separation of traffic. They also provide, sometimes the median will be smaller if you have to put a turn lane in. I don't know if this is proven, but sometimes medians in curb and gutter feel that you should drive slower. So having a median in a four-lane divided road may get the feeling that you should drive slower. I guess those are some of the things that
help with the median. Another major benefit also is
for a pedestrian crossing. So if without a median, you have to cross a really wide street and it's four lanes, but now you break up into two, and you have a pretty comfortable refugee area.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, I think the most benefits from the safety, as as we're talking about the transportation, we'll talk about the crash reduction factor, which means if you do certain things, you can reduce crashes. So the median actually is one of the tools that has a pretty high factor associated with that.
Thanks.
Rebecca, sorry.
Mm-hmm. So to me, this looks like a ton of impermeable surface, this alternative, and also like a brand new highway on the west side. Like, this looks like just an invitation to speed with those really wide lanes and with the bikes off the street, even though there is kind of a non-bike lane, bike lane on the street. And I'm wondering about the traffic counts and projected traffic count, how do they compare to, say, North Sherman Avenue? Do you have any idea, Yang, off the top of your head?
Yeah, I believe it's quite higher than Sherman Avenue.
This would be
higher than Sherman Avenue, yeah. So Sherman Avenue, we converted from, a four-lane roadway for most stretch to one-inch direction with a Toledo.
Yeah.
That's actually working pretty well.
And improved safety
right,
a huge amount and
right,
added better bike facilities while reducing the amount of...
That's correct,
yeah. So I'm just wondering, my question is kind of similar to Ash's first question about what environmental impact's like. This looks like a huge environmental footprint of impermeable surface and looks like, boy, drivers are going to really speed if they're not already.
Like an open highway.
Just because it's just there's nothing stopping. And the medians, I mean, I guess there's some thought that they slow down traffic, but to me it like emboldens drivers to go faster. But that's just an impression that's not, traffic engineer. So, I don't know. Those are just my thoughts. Sharing.
Ash?
Just to kind of pick up on that a little bit more, and I don't know if this is exactly the forum to raise this concern, and maybe the policy board is better, but, when we look at these traffic projections that they've shown us, what was it, 48% by 2038 or something, at some point I think we as a city have to, say that we don't necessarily want all of that capacity to be, satisfied by cars, and there's better ways of moving people, whether it's by bikes, by public transportation, or better land use where you don't necessarily have to drive those large distances. I don't know how far along this project is, but as you said, Alder Campbell, it does seem to be like it's an entirely new highway. And if we want to do things like meet our climate change goals by 2050 or even before that, having all this traffic by car is not going to get us there. And that's just something that I think we should think about as we move forward.
Jessica.
What is the zoning around this? I know it's a couple of different jurisdictions, but I'm curious if it would be interesting to see maybe an overlay of these paths and alternatives with what the current zoning is for anticipated future development, and then I don't know whether how old those plans are, or whether there's any upcoming new plans or zoning master plans. But kind of relatedly, I mean, I'd be curious to know, is this mostly serving kind of what's intended to be future low density residential, or is this, are we trying to build some more walkable nodes, in which case it makes maybe more sense to have some of the more pedestrian and bike infrastructure.
We can definitely come up with something like that.
Other questions? Bill?
Could you go back to the alternatives with the roundabouts?
Mm-hmm.
I guess how many of the intersections, there's not going to be any additional intersections, correct?
Correct.
So of the intersections that exist, how many are going to be proposed to be roundabouts? I assume, well, I shouldn't assume anything. I mean, is it, you're likely to have to go with that alternative with all the ones you've studied with roundabouts, they appear to make sense. Is that fair?
They operate very, very on the same level of service. They're very similar level of services. They provide the same level of service as traffic signals. And we're really talking about the intersections of Elderberry Road, as well as Blackhawk Road and Greenway Boulevard.
Okay. So then the only signalized would be at Old Sauk?
Correct. And that was...
At each end.
Mm-hmm. Mineral Point is a roundabout as well. The intersection of Mineral Point and Pleasant View Road.
Okay. Would anybody mind if I ask the question? As a chair, I have to say that. So. Gary asked a question earlier about what the speed limit was currently. I would follow up to Rebecca's point. Would there be a change in the speed limit with what you're planning to do here? Like that alternative that makes it look like more of an open highway, would the speed limit be the same or would it go up?
That isn't something we've discussed, but that's something we could consider.
Because yeah. That is, would that go to your point then, Rebecca? Or people who just won't pay any attention to the speed limit? Other comments or concerns? It's very helpful for us to have this preliminary, yes.
I guess, so. You know, back to that 21-foot median and alternative 3, I guess I'm questioning what...
Yeah, lots of good conversation about
why
that.
Why do you need that? I mean, if you're going to use roundabouts, you don't need it for left turn base at those three intersections. I mean, if that when you have a signalized intersection, then you need... left turn base. I mean, it's for the future growth. So you need a little bit wider area, median in that area. But the wide median for the rest of it at the... So the only one that's in the middle is Old Sauk, correct?
Correct.
That's going to be... That is... It's already... Is it already signalized?
It is.
Yeah.
It was rebuilt recently, and that's not why this isn't...
So I guess I'm really wondering why you came to that 21-foot... median through there.
I don't know if you want to speak, but I can say it does provide better access to the properties along the corridor. There are several new turn bays into neighborhoods and things, and that would allow the space to provide
a left turn bay. Okay, so you don't show every intersection on here.
I guess we can call them intersections, but a lot of them are essentially driveways to like a condominium, maybe that serves, that has four or five different buildings, but has no other outs. The 21-foot median is definitely the desirable. I can tell you from Elderberry to Old Sauk, the median's not 21 feet. We need to stay within the large ATC poles that are there that we don't want to move because they're really expensive.
Right.
North of Old Sauk to, the old German cemetery, that median, has been narrowed from 21 feet to avoid impacts to significant impacts to the town of Middleton parcels, also reducing impacts to or having no impacts to the cemetery. North of Blackhawk, to Greenway. I think that's where we have more of the desirable median, and then maybe the Middleton portion. I can't quite remember what they've done, but I think they're looking to keep, their desirable median there. It also helps if you want to plant the median and you want to put trees in the median. the desirable is helpful.
So another reason, that in addition to trees,
is at the intersections where you have a crosswalk. And if you also want a left turn bay, so 21 foot allows you to add a traffic lane, and you still have plenty of space pedestrian storage, and also in addition to trees. So typically we try to make medium wider, so it's provide more inviting environment. Between the median and the pavement, most people actually, at least the neighbors prefer wider medium than wider pavement.
You said something about ATC has got some transmission. They're located where in this corridor?
ATC has a large facility that is essentially from almost Elderberry, Mineral Point Road, all the way to, we'll just say the golf course, where the top of the hill is.
Okay.
And those poles are on the... east side of the road, from Mineral Point to Old Sauk, and then they switch to the west side of the road from Old Sauk, we'll just say the golf course, which is between, just north of Greenway. A lot of the poles in the Madison section, we want to keep, because they cost $250,000 to relocate. So we've, all through just south between Elderbear and Old Sauk, you know, that median is going to be, I think it's 7 feet, and it's concrete to avoid those poles.
Okay.
ATC will have to relocate some poles, and I think they're just looking to kind of update their facility in general. The biggest pole that we have to deal with is in the Middleton portion. It's a large angled pole right by a 20-foot cut that we're doing. But again, that's Middleton's portion. There's also a giant railway at 14. Again,
right.
That's also in the Middleton portion of the project.
But that's the section that's going to be constructed first, is from University, starting at University.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Ash?
Also wondering what two questions. One is, did you have a TDM transit alternative that you looked at? And B, did you also, what is the estimated cost of the project total?
Can you answer the first one of those? Yep. I guess I can tell you the estimated cost, I think, is about $30 million. It's about $10 million per phase. That's for construction.
Would you mind repeating the first part?
Did you, as part of the alternatives analysis, did you look at travel demand management or transit alternative?
That has not been considered at this point in time.
Generally, you know, it's our goal to, for new developments, we want to encourage, you know, more use of other mode transportation instead of rely on single occupancy vehicles. So, you know, you see, we try to encourage biking around here as well, provided an off-road path, and in addition to the shoulder, which will probably be, you know, used for bikes as well. In another way, you know, if it's more like a, you know, the infra development, we'll try to make it more transit-oriented. But I don't know, you know, for Oscars, it's going to be pretty hard, at least for a short term, with all the limitations that that we're facing on transit. But, you know, we'll work with our colleagues at Metro to see what we can do. We'll also, I think, you know, Jessica also brought up a very good point about land use. So we'll talk. We'll revisit the traffic forecast. I believe that's done either by MPO or Wisconsin DOT. So we'll make sure the latest land use is incorporated in that. So we'll revisit the forecast, make sure that's that reflects the latest plan. From a city and the other municipalities as well. You know, looking for opportunities maybe to, you know, I see the point that the street looks pretty wide, maybe by the, you know, speeding. I think that kind of a, it will be a balance whether you provide on-street facilities for bikes in the future or not. You know, if we don't have to do that, then we can make it a lot narrower. So we'll take more look at it. Tom, you want to add something?
Yeah. I've been told I'm supposed to speak into the microphone. So,
thank you, Tom.
So I'm not advocating either way, but I think I'll provide a little bit of background. Is that both on the far west side and on the east side, there's a pattern where you have north-south arterials. And if you think about it, you have Whitney Way, then you have Gammon Road, then you have the Beltline, which is kind of being used as a north-south, and then this is kind of meant to be the one next over. And this does lead to the Epic campus. You have a similar type of situation on the east side where you have Monona Drive, you know, Stoughton Road, and then eventually, you know, 4 years from now, we're going to talk to you about Sprecher, which is kind of a similar thing. So this is a lot of pavement, but this is kind of meant to be a north-south roadway that's comparable to, like, a Gammon Road, you know, because when Gammon Road was constructed, 1970s, you know, it was kind of a similar situation. Now, all the comments tonight have been very good, thought out, but I just wanted to provide that context. And so the reason why the investment is being made on this is that they're viewing this as an important north-south corridor.
As far as densities, you know, the as I've been with the city here for going on 4 months, I'm impressed with how the planning department works with landowners and really encourages them towards, to the extent that they can, mixed use, sustainable, you know, land use policies. In fact, there's you can look at developments approved by the city of Madison next to developments approved by the town of Milton, and the densities are literally different by a factor of three. You know, so I think that is a goal and will continue to be a goal, and it's actually in the comprehensive plan. But there, because this is out by the town of Middleton, there are developments that are dispersed. So that's just to provide a little context, and now I'm going to go sit in there.
Great. Tom, could you wait for just a second? Did you have something for Tom?
I guess I could add that you also have there is one in between, one north-south arterial, and that's you just did the interchange.
Junction Road?
Junction Road.
Yeah, Junction
How
Road.
Wide is the median in Junction Road?
You know, I
is
don't,
that 21 feet?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Is that? Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. And I guess it goes back to the land use. If the plan is that this will have a similar land use to what that facility is, then I guess, you know.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I'm not going to comment on the dimensions so much. I will say this, that the I believe that the dimensions that Jeremy is telling you is from flag to flag,
okay.
which is from the edge of the curb to the edge of the curb. So the actual grass portion that would be, is it 2.5?
Yeah.
You take 5 off, so it'd be 16?
Yeah.
So the grass portion is 16. So when you think of 21 feet, that's from the flag to the flag, or the paint stripe to the paint stripe, but the actual green space is 16 feet. Okay. And so that's, and then Yang made a good point too, that you take an 11, you have 16 feet, you take 11 feet off that provides you just a small area that you want as a refuge for a pedestrian.
For a pedestrian.
Yeah. But I think the comments that people have made so far are all very pertinent and relevant. So.
Other comments or questions on this topic? Great discussions tonight. So we appreciate the opportunity to have this preview of it, and we'll look forward to seeing it again.
Thank you.
So the next time we'll see the geometrics, is that, and you'll have made the decision about the intersections then, if they're going to be roundabouts?
Correct, yep. So we'll have, I guess, probably won't do a presentation, it'll probably just be our overall
preferred plan.
On the screen, which shows the limits of everything and where all the paths and sidewalks and narrow median and wide median is and roundabouts.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to see the ATC poles on that next plan, too.
Okay. And the speed limits and some of the other things that people were asking.
It's 35 miles per hour right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're going to reevaluate after construction to see if it makes sense to reduce it. I'm pretty sure down the road it's going to be reduced, with the developments starting to happen over there. But shortly after that, we'll review whether it's appropriate to 35 or 30.
Other comments or questions or things you'd like to see next time? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. For those that may not know you, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah. My name is John Evans. I'm with City Engineering.
And I'm Crystal Martin. I'm the Deputy General Manager.
Yeah. All right. So we just have a very brief presentation for you this evening to bring you up to speed on what's going on out at Metro's bus barn. I think the last time we were before the committee was probably earlier this year, first part of the year, and we were talking about the study that was just getting wrapped up related to the bus barn and talking about, you know, how do we comprehensively make this building work better and run more efficiently and work better for the employees. And we had lots of great information that came out of that study, and part of that study was several phases of work over the next 5 or 6 years that's going to occur. So tonight I'd like to really focus on the first phase that's actively going on right now and give you an update focusing on that. I'm going to touch briefly on just the high level of the other phases. So again, going through tonight, going over the phase one project, showing you a floor plan of what's happening with the phase one project, some pictures of the phase one project, and then ending with just that overall picture of what the phasing is and where we're at with the budget. So for those of you that aren't familiar with the building, it's over on East Washington. This is a kind of an aerial image of the building. East Washington would be left, right on the screen to the north of the building. North is up and south is down. So Central Park would be to the south of the building. There's a railroad track that runs through there as well. And then Ingersoll Street is immediately to the west of the building on the left side of the screen. The bus barn itself was originally designed for about 160, 170 buses. We currently, at peak, house about 220 buses, 225 buses or so, right, Crystal?
We're down to 215 40-foot buses.
Right. No more paratransit. So, you know, we're doing a really good job with the space that we have, but we need more space there. I think we've said it before, it's the hardest working building the city has. It runs 24/7, 365. There's staff in there even. Like, there's a couple people on a skeleton crew even on holidays, you know, Christmas and Thanksgiving. So the buses have to run. And Metro, as you know, they do an excellent job keeping those buses running out of a facility that, you know, is going on close to 40 years old at this point. So many of the systems in the building are 40 years old. Some have been replaced here or there, but there's a lot of things in this building that needed to be prioritized. Coming out of the study, the main priorities were indoor air quality was one of the largest priorities for employees. It was heard loud and clear from the employees. In order to set ourselves up to address those priorities, though, we needed to give ourselves some space in the building so you can start playing that Tetris game where you say, how do you make all the pieces work and keep the building functioning at the same time? So that little red box on the screen, hopefully you can see it, that's the phase one project. It's about a 10,000-foot addition to the building. It's going to be what we call the service lane, where we fuel, wash, vacuum, vault the buses, take the fares out of the buses. Like I said, it's going to set us up for future phases by giving us some space, because right now the current service lane is inside the existing building, and we're going to use that space to start reworking things in the building to make it more efficient. This project also sets us up for the electric buses that are coming in 2020, whether we like it or not. Hopefully we like it. I think we like it. Part of this addition is going to have a mezzanine. We're going to have bus chargers in this mezzanine. They're going to get tied into some bus parking stalls that have, they basically look like, maybe you've seen them already in the committee, but they look like kind of like gasoline dispensers, but they have electric hookups. So we're going to park some buses and set up the building for that as well. So just zooming in a little bit, like I said, electric bus chargers on the mezzanine, which is shown on the upper part of that plan. The lower part of the plan is actually where the buses drive through the service lane. Like I said, they get vaulted, vacuumed, washed, get their bulk fluids. So that's kind of how the service lane is set up. We're going right up against the property line, so we're really maximizing the space that we have there. Something I wanted to mention, too, is it wasn't a priority of employees, but we've heard it loud and clear in surveys that we've done of Metro customers is, like, this bus is not clean. It should be cleaner. This service lane is going to allow us to do that because, the service lane equipment is 40 years old, and there's been a lot of improvements over the years, and and how we can clean these buses. And Metro staff have been working with Mead and Hunt and City Engineering. We've developing a new wash lane, service lane that's going to accomplish that for our for the Metro customers. And I think also it's going to improve energy efficiency, water efficiency, employee productivity, just because it's going to be laid out better. And we're going to use less water. We're going to use less electricity to run the vacuums, things like that. This is just a picture looking in the service lane, kind of, I guess, would be east-west down the service lane, starting from kind of where you come in as you go through the vacuuming and washing. Thought it was interesting. This is maybe a little bit more interesting color rendering of the facility. You know, pretty modest precast construction, brick block, you know, really durable construction materials that are going to last a long time. And then also notice the line of windows along the side. It's going to provide daylight, and hopefully we'll be able to keep the lights off during the day and let more light into the facility. That it's a very you know, there's a lot of volume in the space, interior volume in the space that doesn't have opportunity for daylight. So we're going to be going to urban design in early November, so they'll take a crack at this too, and we may have some feedback from them that we'll need to address too. And just going into the budget and kind of overall plan of the project, I guess the big takeaway here is that in the current the executive capital budget that's going to get voted on in November, we have about close to $60 million of capital improvements associated with Metro. Of 1101, we've got an additional $30 million potentially for satellite facilities. So we're approaching, you know, close to $100 million of improvements for Metro over the next, you know, 6 years, or 5 or 6 years. So that's the main takeaway here. And again, that will, when this budget passes, there'll be basically a design project laid over a construction project every year. So we'll be constructing a project that we designed the previous year, and then designing the project for the next year. So we're going to go through that over a, you know, period of 5 or 6 years. And then just zooming in more onto phase one, in case the committee is curious, the main takeaway here that I wanted to brief you on today is that we're on budget. We've been tracking the budget from the study. We've been tracking it through our schematic design phase. We're currently wrapping up the next phase of the design, which is called design development. We'll be doing another cost evaluation of the project, making sure that we're on budget. But we're within $22,000 of tracking on our budget, which is outstanding for a construction project of this scale. So we're really happy about that. Mm-hmm. So I guess open it up for questions.
Comments or questions from people?
So the service lane addition, what is there now are some doors, aren't there, or some bus entrance doors?
Yeah.
It's an alley.
Yeah, I think you can kind of see it here. The existing, I don't have a laser pointer, but the existing building kind of follows behind the service lane.
Right.
And it. There's a 1980s addition that was put onto that Gissel Foundry historic building where you see those sawtooths, and that kind of juts out to the alley. So the addition is basically hooking into that where it juts out from the Gissel Foundry building and runs along the property line.
Okay.
But yeah, there's some doors and maybe a couple just man doors, not overhead doors.
Okay.
Yeah. Right in front of where the buses will be entering the new service lane is where the fueling, buried fueling storage tanks are, diesel tanks. But other than that, there's a few parking spots, and that's about it out there, right?
Yep. We're not losing any building space by putting this
that's
there.
That's kind of where I was going.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
During the construction, is it going to be... You're going to have to work around as far as getting in with the buses into the building or out of the building?
Yeah, the buses... Do I have a mouse? Okay, there we go. So the buses enter this
right now they go in
here.
Okay.
So we'll be able to do this addition without disturbing...
Okay, without disturbing.
Operations. Which is really helpful.
Okay.
Once this addition is done, we're going to take the existing service lane, which is in this general area.
Oh, okay.
We'll get taken out of service and demolished.
Okay.
And then that becomes storage for future phases.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Other comments?
Just to clarify, is the roof done? The roof phase been moved?
Yeah. So I called it phase zero because it's happening. It was happening outside of the study and happening before the study was completed. But, yeah, it's...
They're just finishing up now.
Yeah, I think they got about half of it done. They stopped for summer. We allowed them to do that because it was helpful and cheaper for us. And then they're going to finish up by, pretty soon, right?
Yep, they need to finish up by the middle of November, I think.
Yeah, contractually it's middle of November before the snow flies.
Well, that was last Saturday.
Yes, right.
Bill? There was an email from earlier this
afternoon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And is this an appropriate time to talk about, or you want to wait on that? As far
we certainly can.
To see the facility.
So Ann Schroeder sent out an email. I had inquired of Chuck and asked him if people who were new to the commission had an opportunity to get a tour of Metro. And I haven't been in a while, and I certainly would like to go again. But when I was new on the Transit and Parking Commission, it was really great to go out there and get a tour and hear about Metro and see Metro and understand all of their operations. So I would encourage everybody to look for the email from Ann because she was looking for dates and times. Jessica, I saw that you had replied already. She's trying to get a better sense of when people would like the tour to be. She's planning on about an hour, I think. So, Crystal, did you have anything to add to that?
Look forward to hosting you at Metro.
Yeah.
I mean, are we talking in the next 2 weeks or next month? Or
Chuck, do you have a timing?
I'll pull a Tom Lipscher.
Yeah.
It's really whatever works. I mean, it's nice to do it before the snow flies and it's really cold because it's nice to walk around. So hopefully we can do that, say, before December.
Okay.
But again, if you could get some dates to Ann Schroeder, we'd appreciate it. And as Crystal said, we'd like to welcome you to Metro.
Yeah. Maybe plan for, I mean, if you rush, you can do it in an hour. If we'd like to bring you into the administration offices, we can give you like an overview. And then you have to add in the walking time to get over to the garage and then walking back. Mm-hmm. Just the walking time round trip is 20 minutes.
I think I was there for more than an hour when we did it.
Yeah. I think Crystal's point is spot on. I would allow an hour and a half. That way, Gary has done this with us. We sit down, we talk about some of the policy issues, just about a half hour. And as Crystal said, by the time you walk to one end of the building and back, it'll fill up that hour and a half plus. So.
Okay. So maybe mention that to Ann, that instead of the hour that...
Yep, we will do that.
...that she's talking about.
I think another cool thing about it being more than an hour is when I took it, I got to meet the heads of three or four of your shops.
Yep. I mean, so the one guy who was... They were... Anyway.
Right.
And that's really important to realize just how intensely skilled all these different people are.
Yes, thank you.
And all the training, and I mean, we covered everything, so I think it was very helpful to me.
And in case it's not clear, we enjoy it, so it would be great to have you.
Normally, I need people to wear comfortable shoes for the tour, but looking around, I can see under the desk, you guys are all good to go.
Okay, any other comments or questions for the folks from Metro on this topic? Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
You're next.
Thanks, John. We have another Metro item here. Crystal, go ahead.
This will be fine. So I pulled together a few slides. They're not nearly as fancy as everything else that you've been seeing today, but I'm here to talk about the VW Settlement Grant Program. The VW Automotive of America was found in violation of the Clean Air Act, and as a result of that, they were required to pay into an environmental mitigation fund.
So that was $2.9 billion into that fund. Wisconsin's share will be $67 million, and the state of Wisconsin has decided to create a transit capital assistance fund with $32 million of that, which will go specifically to help us buy buses, so funding for that. The idea being that if you replace really old buses, any new bus you buy is going to be that much more efficient and clean. Our newer buses, since I think 2010, all have the clean idle feature. So, and the buses we would be looking to retire and fund through this program are older than that. So we would meet the criteria. The application was due September 28th, and we submitted one requesting funding for 15 buses and that we would replace or use the funding for 5 buses a year for 3 consecutive years. The decommissioned buses, we can't resell them because that would pretty much defeat the purpose of trying to get them out of circulation, so they have to be disabled, basically throw sand in the engine block or something like that, and then provide proof that they're done for. So the unique thing about this grant application is the way that it's structured. It's set up as a 0% interest loan, and municipalities over 200,000 in population, which is us, are required to pay back 75% of the loan amount. So that results in a 25% subsidy for our bus purchase. The repayment method is a reduction in our city's shared revenue that we pay get from the state. This is all complicated, so I've been, like, trying to make sure that I make it simple, and it's still complicated. But over a 10-year period, you pay back 75% of the amount that was awarded, in this case, hopefully to us. And the net savings for us for the 15 buses would be about $3 million over 12 years. The resolution that you're being asked to vote on this evening, ask for your approval, not just for our ability to receive the funds if we were to be awarded them, but also approving that we would then have the reduction in shared revenue up to $5,625,000 over the 10-year period. What happens is that we, you know, lower that shared revenue amount over that period of time, which when you spread that over a 12-year period, it's, you know, about $500,000 a year. But the long-term impact is that we have a net savings of $3 million.
Yeah. If I can just clarify, Rebecca, I think this, and Ash, I think this went to the Transportation Policy and Planning Board. I think it's just informational here. Yeah, it's not presented as an action
fantastic.
Item.
Fantastic.
They will hear me on Monday.
And you act, you'll act on
it'll this. Be on our... Is it on our agenda for Monday?
Yes, I think it is. Yeah, it's just informational here, Crystal.
Well, then, here's some more information for you. I've got some pictures of the buses. This grant application was a bit unique in that, they don't usually ask for pictures of the buses that we intend to retire and what condition that they're in. So you can see here we've got, lighting isn't the best, but this is a 2004 Gillig bus number 880. These are buses currently in service for Dodger service. And so you can see that particularly where there's weld or exposure to the elements, this is a rear bumper, and you can see those bumpers are tough materials, and it's split there, and the welds and the bolts here are pretty well rusted. And in this case, this is a New Flyer bus. This is the rear stairwell, and you can see how well rusted it is and going underneath the rubber matting. So I just wanted to share with you what we were sharing with the folks at the state in terms of replacing buses.
Ash?
It does not appear to be on the policy board's agenda. I don't know
So, and I'm a sponsor of this, but I saw a draft of the resolution, but I haven't seen the actual one yet. And what the referrals are. Is it coming to council for introduction on Tuesday?
Yeah.
I thought we introduced it.
It was the 16th. It was introduced.
52630.
Yes. And I've got a copy of it. I think I'm pretty sure I pulled it off of this agenda.
My understanding is that because this is a financing mechanism, that the finance committee has main jurisdiction, but we can double check that.
All I know is it's just here tonight for information only.
Finance committee had it on October 8th. Recommend to council to adopt report of officer. Introduced to the common council on the 16th of this month.
And the referrals.
Yeah, see if you see down at the bottom of page one, it says this resolution was referred to the.
TPPB is in control of this.
Yeah, so I don't.
It does have to be.
So we have to add that to the.
We have to add that to the agenda for Monday. And what's today? We have time. We can still have that.
I knew I had seen that on there somewhere.
Glad we talked about that. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, go ahead, Gary.
Not to look a gift horse in the mouth, but we chose diesel because we get more bang for our buck, or we've been buying a lot of hybrids and even thinking about electric buses for the future, but is this more bang for the buck? Is that why we're doing it this way?
So the state of Wisconsin has a $51 million backlog in transit capital projects for all the systems in the state, and this is $32 million. So if the systems apply for diesel buses, which are fairly regular expense as opposed to something more expensive like a hybrid or an all-electric buses, the funds won't go very far in terms of taking care of the total unmet need in the state.
Okay.
It would be fun, but at the same time, so that everybody has the opportunity to participate.
A level playing field, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ash?
I just wanted to point out, you know, the Volkswagen Mitigation Fund was set up so, you know, you can take out cars that were dirty and replace them, or buses that were dirty and replace them. And the state of Wisconsin is one of the only states in the country that is forcing transit systems to pay back a lot of the money, and in terms, because we're getting a reduction in shared revenue, as you said, right, Crystal? And I just wanted to point out the inherent, you know, we should have been getting just the $5.9 million and not have to pay back any of that money at all, which is what other states are doing. They're getting the grants just to be able to, you know, buy different cars. And the question I had, Crystal, was, do you know if this money has come to has been released to the state of Wisconsin?
I do not know. But my understanding is that the program that the state has set up does have to be approved by the trust fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that's occurred yet.
Yeah, but so even though Madison Metro does come out ahead at this point, you know, we could have been doing a lot better if the state did not make us pay back this money. So.
And currently our application is being reviewed by the state, as all the applications that have been submitted in Wisconsin.
Jessica?
Yeah, I had kind of a similar question without, you know, having, I guess, had the numbers really clear in my head. What will they do if we're paying back the majority of these funds? Are they using that to leverage up for more, or is the state ultimately just receiving 75% of that grant to do with what they please?
They haven't said.
Okay.
But okay. But so far, because they haven't said, I would say B. No.
My understanding, they can receive 2/3 of the funds immediately, and then the remainder is going to be spread out over 10 years or so. And, you know, in the event that there's a leadership change, either at the legislature or in the governor's office, these things could also change, is my point. So.
Rebecca?
So is the payback, the payback is coming off as a reduction in general aid. Is that going to be on Metro's books, or where is that going to be? Where will that be calculated?
I believe that's through the city, but Chuck may have had more detailed discussion.
First, let me say we're relying heavily on Dave Schminicky to understand this. But it is not reducing our city share for Metro. I don't know if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, that is what I'm asking.
So it is not impacting. It's impacting the overall city's share. But because it's still a net benefit to the city, i.e. to Metro, it is worthwhile doing it, but it's not reducing our Metro city share.
Okay. And I'm
glad you're asking that. We will double check that.
Yeah,
triple check
I am
that,
asking
that.
And I'm asking that because I just learned that about, you know, how financing costs, capital costs are assessed to our specific budget, and they're not to other agencies' budget.
Right, because we're a utility. That's
right.
A good point.
Right.
We have debt service that's charged to us, where if you're a police or fire department and you're building a facility, they're not paying debt service.
Correct. Hmm. So I'm just wondering if there's a similar, like, if that way of thinking is going to kick into this, and this will...
It's a great question. My understanding is it won't negatively impact our annual city share, but, of course, that's something we will be eagle eyes on with you.
And let me know if you need me to advocate.
Other comments or questions? Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, crossover members, Rebecca and Ash, did you want to... maybe just give us a little update as to what's been happening at the Transportation Policy and Planning Board.
I don't think I was at, did I miss the last meeting?
Is it after the joint meeting? That was it.
Tom,
yeah,
come back to the table.
The last one was the joint meeting?
Right.
Okay. All right.
And the next one
was, yeah, there was a meeting after the joint meeting that you guys had.
Yeah.
So I guess we've never actually...
a little bit later to do...
Right. You did something after the joint. You had your own meeting after the joint meeting. But I don't think the minutes have been approved, so they weren't released to come. So this is something we can handle in the future, maybe based off the minutes that come. Is that easier for you?
And I think what we talked about was, and because we only had one, this body only had one meeting, we talked about that update coming for the... first meeting of the month, so it would be closer to the TPP, the actual TPP meeting, which is at the end of the month.
But that was canceled.
Right, I know.
In
so
October.
It's a weird situation.
And in November, it's canceled again because of some conflict. It wasn't ever scheduled. There was some, I think, Chuck, there was some...
Or was budget meetings or something.
Something
like
in
that.
November. So our meeting isn't until the 28th.
Oh, I'm going to be out of town for that.
Yeah. So... something with regard to the parking manager position? I'm seeming to remember that being on the agenda.
So we had, that was the meeting in which we changed the designation for parking manager to...
director.
Correct, yeah. A motion.
So that went move forward, Ash?
Yes, it did move forward with the recommendation that the word manager remain under paragraph 5, executive secretary. So I'm blanking on what that means exactly
right
now.
We'll look for the minutes next time, because after your next meeting, the minutes will be approved. And then once we get into that pattern, we'll have approved minutes that can come to us, and maybe that will make it easier in the future.
And we did put some stuff on the agenda for future, just talking about things in the future, and I can... just rattle off the list of things we did, which was scooter legislation, the Wilson and Bassett Street updates, an update on bus rapid transit. We put down a pedestrian study just to understand what was, where pedestrians were using the system and where crashes were happening. A bus satellite facility, and then funding and impact fees.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. All right. Thanks. Okay, Gary, did you want to update on the
I think minutes were provided to committee members, and I think as you, if you look through the minutes, there are at least two suggestions that might move forward. We have a meeting tomorrow, and hopefully that might be the last meeting we have. So perhaps in November we will have a series of things to present and get your approval. So.
Okay. Anybody have any questions about the subcommittee meeting? Okay. Last item, you received in your packet some information about the Jeffrey Clay Erlinger Civility in Public Discourse Award. And the nominations are must be received by 4:30 on Friday, November 2nd. So that's coming up here pretty quickly. So we were asked to put it on our agenda and make sure that everybody is aware of this and to make sure that any nominations come forward on a timely basis. Okay. Reports of other committees are, we already covered that pretty much, I think. Announcements and future agenda items. Is anybody, we've had the Blair Street project was a suggestion. Bill had a suggestion. No, Ken had a suggestion on the structural changes in the Livingston garage, how that contributes to the longevity of new parking ramps, parking structures. Other than those two things that we talked about, any other suggestions for future agenda? We've got a lot of things coming, crash reports and police department safety reports. And I think one of the things we talked about, Yang, was maybe a work plan just so we can sort of have a little schedule of all of the things that we need to look at, because some of them we haven't even seen yet.
Right. So, yeah, I'm working with all different departments. We're going to put together a plan for different departments providing, you know, reports in front of the Planning Commission. We're trying to space it out instead of doing it at one or a couple of the meetings. We try to spread it out over the year so that we can add you know, other items as it comes up in addition to these regular reports. Good. So I'm putting that together, and I'm going to finalize that with Anne and add into the future agendas.
Yeah, so there'll be things of crossing guards. We have
the police, annual reports, quarter reports. Annual crash reports, traffic signal priority.
So a lot of things we haven't seen yet that we will be seeing on a regular basis. And that's why we moved the reports, like the metro reports and the parking reports we used to see monthly. We're just doing those quarterly. So that'll help with some of the flow of information. Any other agenda items?
Email, and it was more just a follow-up to see we'd received an email from a member, a professor at the university about cycling.
Yes.
Do we have any follow-ups on that? Is that a city attorney? Is that kind of a city attorney thing? Right
yes. Now? What John said was that someone in the city attorney's office is apparently that request had come to the council as well as it had come to me. Into the Transportation Commission. So John said that somebody in the city attorney's office is working on that, and they'll let us know when they have something back. I haven't seen anything back. Had anybody else seen anything back? Okay, so as far as I know, they're working on it.
Great.
Because that's certainly something I added to my list of topics for future agenda, because it seems pretty dangerous to me too. So any other ideas?
Move to adjourn.
Okay, motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, wow, we almost hit the 3-hour. Rebecca. We almost hit. We almost